This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday. You can find our podcast, reviews, and more at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and just about anywhere else you can listen to podcasts. My name is Aaron Peterson, and welcome to a special episode of our show. Today, we are going to talk solely about The Hobbit trilogy. Now that it's complete with the Battle of the Five Armies, and you've had a little bit of time to see it, we're going to talk about how did the trilogy fare? Did it live up to The Lord of the Rings? Did it stand on its own? You know, we're going to talk about as much as we can about it. Joining me for this little quest today is the Hollywood Outsider's own Gandalf, Brian Williams. Hey, Brian.
Hey, buddy. What's happening?
Not much. Are you excited to talk about hobbitses?
I am ready just to squeal.
I'm not convinced about that at all. And in our third chair, joining us remotely from the great state of California, we brought along a huge Lord of the Rings fan who's also a fan of Little People Everywhere. From the Guilty Film Podcast, Kevin McKee. How you doing, Kevin?
As a matter of fact, I am a little person. Not really, but I'm kind of short. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm a longtime listener of your show, so it's really exciting for me to be guesting on it.
Well, and you get your own show. What's Guilty Film? Tell us about Guilty Film before we start.
I do have my own show. So Guilty Film, we review our favorite guilty pleasures of film. So in any given week, you might hear us talk about a movie like Sister Act or Masters of the Universe or Drumline even.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. And we also do anti-guilty pleasures, which are movies that we hate that just about everybody else loves. And we also have a stable of lawyers where we take the crimes of filmmaking to court.
The crimes of filmmaking. And I guessed on that show. It's a really fun show. You guys should check it out. I wish we could do more of those. Those are fun shows to do. Do you like doing that? Like talking about movies that some people trash, but you like?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of fun to be on both sides of the fence because oftentimes I'm the only one on the panel defending, the Care Bears movie.
Whoa.
And then sometimes I get to trash somebody else's guilty pleasure. And then sometimes we all agree and it's, you know, we all hold hands and sing songs.
You defend the Care Bear movie?
Love the Care Bear movie.
All right, I'm not going to judge you.
Ooh. I might.
Which I'm discrediting myself at the very front end of this podcast, so anything I say about The Hobbit is completely irrelevant from this point on.
No. I mean, I'm sure a lot of Hobbits fans like Care Bears. I'm sure that's a possibility. Well, first off, I do want to ask you guys, now that everything is complete, we have all three movies, all the Hobbits are in order. Where does this sit with you as far as the trilogy is concerned as a whole?
Yeah, I think the trilogy as a whole is pretty good. It's of course to me it doesn't measure up to the original Lord of the Rings trilogy. It's kind of like Little Caesar's Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's okay.
It's pretty good, but given a choice, I'd probably rather have Papa John's, you know. It's just not as good a quality as the original Lord of the Rings.
Are you comparing Papa John's to Lord of the Rings? Because I think
it's a pizza. There's actually a couple other ones. I just don't know if everybody that listens to this knows that brand.
Okay.
So I went
okay.
with a brand that people can relate to.
Fine. What about you, Kevin? Where are you at with it?
Little Caesars. Gross.
Yeah.
So I am not a fan of the Hobbit movies. And to make sure I wasn't, because it didn't make a lot of sense to me, considering I have undying love for the Lord of the Rings movies. So I rewatched the first two Hobbit movies again and saw the new one and then read the book for, I think, what was the third time. And yeah, I just don't like them. And there's a number of reasons why. I think primarily, I'll just kick it off with this. I think all the films, the Hobbit films, have a character problem. I don't think there's a true protagonist in the film, and I never became invested in any particular character through all three films. And I have an example for you.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Boromir, played by the ever-dying Sean Bean, is in about half of Fellowship of the Ring. And I had a very emotional reaction to his death at the end of that film, which I would say is about 10 times stronger than when Thorin or Feely or Kili died at the end of the last Hobbit film. And they were in all three movies. So I think that says something.
There's something to be said for that. I actually, and we'll get into each character a little bit, or not each character, but we'll get into the characters a little bit more in depth. But I actually kind of agree with that. And it's hard because I'm sure somebody's listening, or probably several people are listening, going, I love everything about The Hobbit. I don't think anybody's here to trash the series at all. I just think we have varying appreciations for how it turned out. And that's what we're going to talk about. I think a lot of it has to do with the bar that they set with the first trilogy. I mean, it's just astronomical how well that did. Mm-hmm. And then I think a lot of it has to do with my next question. Do you think it was smart to stretch, it's 140, 150 page book, whatever it is, The Hobbit, into three movies? Do you think that was the right call, or do you think it was a detriment to this as a film series?
Well, I think Bilbo said it best in Fellowship when he said that it was that he felt sort of thin and stretched, like butter scraped over too much bread. Mm-hmm. I think that is the Hobbit films to a T. Because I mean, the book itself is about what, 230 pages, I think.
Is that what it is? I thought it was a lot less than that. Oh well.
I guess it probably depends on which version of the book you're reading. My particular one was 230 pages, but you're making an 8 to 9 hour movie essentially from that. And the original trilogy, you were taking 400 to 500 page books and condensing each one into a 3 hour movie. So there's a vast difference there. And I mean, you know, Peter Jackson, I think he put together some interesting stuff to add into the Hobbit films to kind of fill them out, but even then, did we need 3 hour movies for each of these Hobbit films? I'm not sure.
Brian, what do you? I know my answer. My answer is very much no, very much no. And there was a lot of fluff and not enough story, I think.
Yeah, I total agreement with both of you guys. It's at best maybe two movies. You know, the Smaug storyline should have been wrapped up in the second one. It just felt thin is the best way and watered down is just kind of the best way of describing it. I would rather have seen two movies at 2.5, 2:45, where it was a lot tighter. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. maybe we would have gotten that attachment to the characters more so, because I agree with you, Kevin. I didn't have any emotional attachment to pretty much anybody.
Well, I like Bilbo. I mean, I thought Martin Freeman did a very good job for what he was given.
Yes, I will agree with that. Absolutely. And I mean, in my real job, I'm a film and video editor for the most part. And when I look at these three Hobbit films, I'm always talking about trimming the fat. You trim the fat from your movie. You get it as lean as it can be, as tight as it can be. These films are morbidly obese.
Like The Goblin King.
Oh, yes, God. Very much so.
Yeah, that was a little... One thing I want to bring up before we get into the nuts and bolts. The Battle of Five Armies just came out. I know people probably just saw it. Did you guys think... Because this is my opinion, okay? For me, it was the weakest of the trilogy, and we'll get into all that. But for me, it's the weakest of the trilogy. And a big part of that is because of the way that they... Because Smaug was so, he was only in maybe the first 10 minutes of the movie, if that. Mm-hmm. And for me, he's so amazingly done. And that was so amazingly done that because you put him at the beginning and nothing throughout the film came close to rivaling that, it actually was a detriment to the rest of the movie. Like, I think if you took Smaug and you, I never know the right way to say that. And you end him. You end his story with the destruction of Lake Town, and then you basically the next movie picks up after Lake Town's destroyed. I think I probably would have enjoyed Battle of the Five Armies a little bit more. Does that make sense, or am I just being stupid?
No. Yeah, I can see that being the case. I mean, I think they painted themselves into a corner in the second film because they had done so much already that to fit the destruction of Lake Town into that second film would have thrown you into the 3 hour and 10-20 minute mark. Mm-hmm. I know Peter Jackson loves long films, but at some point, you know, somebody's going to tell him, hey, it's getting a little ridiculous.
I don't think anybody tells him that.
You're probably right.
I think he got emails, but they took them and they never show it to him. They're like, no. Make them as long as you want. It's okay. Brian, what about you? Do you think that's a factor?
Yeah. I think that, the Smaug part of it should have been ended with the second one. Maybe stop the second movie with them migrating to the kind of ending up at the city just in front of the mountain just before the big face off, and then spend this last movie pretty much as 2 hours of a giant battle that rivals the Return of the King, because the Return of the King in the Lord of the Rings one was just this epic battle, and the CGI worked very well with that. But this here, it just felt like a little skirmish, and there was two or three more armies than what was going on in that one. So this theoretically should have been a hell of a lot more majestic, and it just wasn't. It just felt like a side note, really.
Mm-hmm. It was a huge battle, and I really thought the battle was fine. It was way too long, and I get that you have to have that because it's the Battle of Five Armies, and man, it was really long. Like, it got to the point, I've never been bored with a battle before, and I was getting pretty bored.
Oh yeah, I was absolutely bored. I thought it was funny too, rereading the book, that the Battle of the Five Armies in the book is 7 pages long. And I think it's about an hour long in the movie, is it not?
Yeah, I would say it's pretty close, if not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very long battle. And I think, wow, does that mean Peter Jackson, 7 pages equals an hour? What would he do with? Wow, that's a lot. I want him to make the Bible now. Imagine how long that would be. That would be fantastically long. And he'd still put wizards in it for some reason. Well, let's get more in the positives. I feel like I don't want to be negative, and I know there's some negative feelings, but it's definitely still a good film series to me. Just didn't, I think when you compare the two, it's not a fair comparison. One thing I want to ask you about the trilogy, it's not in our format. Do you think the lighter tone was intentional? Because I think some people have said The Hobbit trilogy is very bright and very light, and where Lord of the Rings is very dark and very gritty. I felt like that was intentional. Do you guys feel that way, or do you feel like it's just a matter of because there are so many special effects that made it feel that way?
I don't know. I think with the Lord of the Rings, when it was just you're kind of following Frodo's depth, or his trek into darkness, kind of for pardon the pun, but to the dark side, so to speak. So the whole tone gets darker and darker as you go. This wasn't so much about that. So I think you could kind of keep a little bit of a lighter tone.
Yeah, I'm not terribly convinced that it is that much lighter than the Lord of the Rings films. I think that maybe why people are thinking that and saying that is because The Hobbit is a children's book. So they're not dealing with maybe as heavy themes as the Lord of the Rings was, but the book itself is very much a skeleton, and Peter Jackson basically put meat on the bones, and the story itself maybe is more lighthearted, but I think the look and feel that he went for was very much along the same lines as the Lord of the Rings movies, maybe too much so.
Okay, just wanted to know. Now, as fans, when you saw the original Hobbit, what was that like for you, like before you got to the theater versus after you saw the movie?
Yeah, leading up to it, there was just a lot of anticipation. When you do something, whether it's make a movie, whether it's giving a stand-up comedy performance, whatever the case is, there's the old phrase, leave the audience wanting more. Well, mm-hmm. Even after 12, 13 hours of the first trilogy, I still wanted more and was so happy to get it. And then after, I was not disappointed, but it was satisfied.
Okay.
But not really, not really ecstatic. Like, yes, that's what I've been waiting for. I can't wait for, the next ones to come out. And I take that back because I do have a certain level of anticipation for all three of these, but they're just, I just didn't leave with that feeling, the same feelings that I had leaving the Lord of the Rings movies. golly, it just sounds so bad. Because I
sure
can't.
Does. We need to pick up
because
the.
I can't describe it other,
it
you know, other than underwhelming. Really, I mean, that being said, it's still, you know, I still like the movies and the trilogy as a whole. It just didn't live up to my expectations.
Now, Kevin, you said that you aren't a fan, so you're probably the one that least likes the trilogy the least of the three of us, because you're a diehard Lord of the Rings fan. So what was that like for you before you got there and after you went?
You know, I think, well, first of all, let me say something. I'll say something nice. I'll be positive. Peter Jackson, along with Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens. When they translated Lord of the Rings, 10, 12 years ago, they were just absolutely masterful. I mean, I don't know if I've seen a better book to film translation. And I honestly think that they did a pretty good job translating The Hobbit to film as well. I think it's just that the source material is so much weaker than the Lord of the Rings books. Because I've read, you know, all four, The Hobbit and then the three Lord of the Rings books many, many times. And The Hobbit is just so much weaker. So I think that equaled a not as impressive film translation, because it's not as interesting a story with, you know, lesser interesting characters.
So going into it, when you first went into, were you not as excited because you knew the source material and you're like, I don't know how this is going to pan out?
Well, I think I probably should have reread The Hobbit before I saw the first film, and then I would have known what I was getting into. It had been a while. And I don't think there's any avoiding the expectations that were set up by the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I mean, there just isn't, because, you know, to me, those are three of the greatest movies of all time on my top 100 list for sure. Absolutely. So I don't think there was any avoiding being let down to a certain degree. And I you know, there's other things I will say later about Peter Jackson as a director too. So that was something else.
Well, I am going to be the most positive, I think. I was excited to see the new trilogy because I always loved The Hobbit. It was one of my favorite kids' books. But like you said, Kevin, it totally was a kids' book. You know, it's a children's book. It's not I think people sometimes forget that those two, even though they're the same world, it's not really fair to compare the two because they are totally different kinds of works. That Lord of the Rings trilogy is meant to be a monumental world and a monumental actions from that world. I mean, what they're doing is supposed to determine the fate of the world, where The Hobbit is more supposed to be, let's follow this little guy and his adventure. And there's some cool stuff that happens, but it's really about this little guy and his adventure.
Right.
And for me, I knew that going in because I remembered that book very well. And I knew that there's going to be some people disappointed, I guess. I really liked the first movie. I think, you know, it just, even though it was a little bit long, I thought they did a great job of introducing the dwarves. I think they, you know, bring in the stone giants was really interesting to me. You know, it was a nice little add. I thought Bilbo was excellently done. I love the beginning tie-in with Frodo popping in and Bilbo. And Gandalf, I mean, seeing McKellen back, it just, everything felt like, it felt like a homecoming, you know? And even though I didn't think, it didn't blow me away. It wasn't like any of the first three films. But it still, for me, I really liked it. And I felt refreshed. Like, I was very happy with that movie. I didn't love it, but I liked it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely the closest to the book in terms of the three Hobbit films.
Yes.
By far.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with that.
What is it?
My name is Bilbo Baggins.
Bagginses. What is a Bagginses, precious?
I'm a hobbit from the Shire.
Oh, we like goblinses, batses, and fishes, but we haven't tried hobbinses before. Is it soft? Is it juicy?
No! No! Keep your distance!
Now, let's talk about the performances. We mentioned them a little bit, but Freeman and Armitage are kind of the biggest new additions. And we also saw returns from, and we're assuming you know who these people are if you're listening to this because you're fans of the series. So just you know, we're not going to, you know, explain every single person. Hopefully you know who we're talking about. Freeman and Armitage were the new additions. We also saw returns from Orlando Bloom, Ian McKellen, Kate Blanchett. Who in this series stood out the most for you?
Martin Freeman is amazing. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. He's an amazing Bilbo. It's unfortunate that he isn't given anything really to work with that's as amazing as, you know, say Frodo and Sam in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm-hmm. Nothing that's really emotional and gets to you. But for what he's given, an amazing performance by him. And aside from that, I think the acting is pretty solid all around. I mean, there's nobody that really stood out as being an absolutely terrible performance. You know, I got to hand it to Peter Jackson. While he may be obsessed with CGI stuff, he still does take the time to direct his actors, which always pleases me.
Oh, absolutely. What did you think about Armitage? He seems to get, or either one of you, I'm sorry, he seems to get the most flack for playing Thorin Oakenshield. I've read a lot of reviews that kind of trashed his performance, which I don't think are fair, but I also don't think he blew me away. You know, I don't think he was as good as Aragorn. So what do you guys think about him? Did he bring it home, or he was just suitable?
I think he did well considering what was asked of him, but I mean, to this day, I'm just goddamn confused about what his character is supposed to be. I've been referring to him as the routine douchebag, because through all the movies, he's usually being a dick to one person or another, and then he'll take a moment and realize his fault, but then 5 minutes later, he's mouthing off like an asshole again. So the problem was that in The Hobbit, in the book, his character isn't very fleshed out, so they had to decide who this character was going to be, essentially. And I'm not exactly sure if they found what they really wanted him to be in the end. So it was a very confusing character, so his acting obviously is going to seem a little off-kilter.
Well, I think he did a good job with the dragon's curse, or whatever, I can't remember what you call it. But essentially when he, you know, the gold overwhelms him and he's cursed, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he just can't get that greed out of his mind. I think that he did a very good job with that. He handled it well. And that was from the book. I remember that. That's one of the prominent that and Smaug were some of the prominent memories from the book, were how he, you know, eventually came back around and, you know, Bilbo, he realized that Bilbo was. I thought he did a good job with that. But I think you're right about a lot of it. A lot of the movie, it's just kind of like he was just there and grumbly. Mm-hmm. And kind of being a douchebag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he never really seemed to, I guess his arc never really, you never saw him really grow. I mean, he spiraled into the, you know, the dragon's gold curse, whatever, of course. But I mean, I totally agree with you there. He never really seemed to really learn from his mistakes. You know, for 2 hours, he gives Bilbo a hard time. Then, oh, you saved my ass. Appreciate it, you know. You're all right.
It was more of a circle than an arc, you know, the D-bag circle.
The D-bag circle. Oh, I wish he would have gave him a fist bump explosion. I think that would have been fantastic. What's up, Frodo? Or I'm sorry, Bilbo. Same guy.
They're all Frodo.
Every hobbit should be called Frodo. What about the new, or the old guard? I'm sorry, the old guard. You got Orlando Bloom, you got Ian McKellen, and you got Cate Blanchett. Any of those stand out? You're glad they came back? You wish, like, you felt like they neutered anything?
I thought Orlando Bloom should have been just about written out of that. He was so difficult to watch.
How
so? For a number of different levels. One, it looked like, I couldn't tell if they were trying to make him look younger or what, but the whatever CGI stuff they had going on with him was atrocious. So it was really distracting. And all it was just a bunch of, you know, elfin dancing on, you know, acrobatics the whole time, you know, and that was it. I mean, I never felt like he was the badass elf that he was in, say, the last two Lord of the Rings movies. Mm-hmm. He just was this pouty guy that was jealous because the girl that he liked had a crush on a dwarf.
I don't blame her. I don't blame him. She's pretty hot, so I'd be jealous too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Peter Jackson loves to put Legolas in video games. I'm not exactly sure why, particularly that character. I didn't have a problem with Legolas in the movie necessarily, but I do have a problem with the CGI scenes that he was in.
I don't understand. The one thing about Legolas I was really... I don't want to say bad because I love seeing him in there because I'm like, oh, that's a throwback to the old series. Is that they? It felt like he didn't have a sense of humor in this one. You know what I mean? Like he was really clever. I thought he had a lot of great moments in the first series, and this one he was very stoic throughout. Am I wrong about that, or is that just
no? He just I never felt like he was acting. I just felt like he was giving one stare at it was like Blue Steel over and over again.
It's Blue Steel.
That's all he did was just stare with his steely blue eyes at the camera and okay, is that the jealous face or is that the angry face or let's drink some dragon meat or whatever and have a good time face. They're all the same face.
Legolas has a new superhero name for me now, Blue Steel. Oh,
I like it. I like it. Tell me, let's get away from the performances, but let's do it on a positive. Tell me who are your favorite characters in this series, Brian?
I'll tell you the one guy that I like. I mean, and that was one of the dwarves, Balin, the old white bearded guy. He was kind of like, basically he was like the Gandalf for dwarves.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He was, you know, he was the kind of the calming. He was always keeping Thorin in check. He was kind of the rational voice, the moral compass, if you will, like, hey, all right, look, you know, that sucks. We'll figure out a way to fix it, whatever. You know, he was kind of the history guy. He would fill us in on the past and that kind of everything. And he just had a good calming effect, I think. And he's just kind of a good sensibilities about him. He was just kind of the guy that stood out to me.
Yeah, I was surprised by this after the films were over, but Luke Evans as Bard, I really enjoyed, and I think that's because I related to him more than any other character in the movies. And I think his performance was pretty solid, too.
I actually agree. I think he was probably my favorite, next to Bilbo, my favorite character, and this includes Gandalf, and my favorite character in the whole series. It seems like he and Gandalf and Bilbo were the only ones that were interested in doing the right thing at all times.
Right.
And yeah. And he just seemed like, he reminded me very much of Aragorn, where he, you know, he just came in, he took charge, and he did what he had to do, and he was there for the right reasons, and he wasn't just a greedy son of a, he didn't want to start war. I just really liked him, and I thought Luke Evans did a great job.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the funny thing about it is that, aside from killing Smaug, everything about his plot line was completely fabricated by Peter Jackson.
What do you mean?
He has essentially 4 pages in the book and that's it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's very minimal. Well, he did a great job then. See, there we go. We can give Peter Jackson some props. I feel bad because I know that it sounds like we're being really negative and I don't want that to come across because we're just trying to be fair, I think.
I just want Peter Jackson to be a better director. We're just giving him notes, right?
Exactly.
What do you think that maybe part of the difference is the original trilogy was more of a passion project. This might have been just more, well, I kind of feel obligated to do it since I kind of opened Pandora's box, so to speak. So,
well, he wasn't even supposed to direct it originally, correct? Wasn't it Guillermo del Toro?
It was supposed to be del Toro, right. Yeah. And that would have been something to see, I think.
Yes.
That
would have been fantastic.
As much as I'm happy the book got brought to life, I'm happy that the story's been told. I'm happy that now at some point I can sit down, and I will sit down and it'll take probably about a week and a half for me, but I'll sit down and watch all 6 movies back to back to back. I'm glad that we have that, but I will always, in my mind, wish I would have gotten Del Toro's version of this story. Mm-hmm. I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely. Definitely curious as to how that would turn out.
Much different, I think. Now, on the flip side, which characters just didn't click for you?
For me, it's Legolas. It's just, I don't know if he was just, I think he was just so distracting with all the CGI and everything with his face. He just didn't look like a person half the time. Again, it was the Blue Steel thing. I mean, I kind of covered all that stuff a minute ago. It just, he distracted me every time I saw him. And I just didn't feel, I mean, I guess you had to do, I know the Tauriel character was fabricated, so I guess you had to work him in there with that, but he just didn't, he just took me out of the movie every time he was in, and he never brought what he brought in the first trilogy, you know, the tough guy thing. I mean, he had some fight scenes, but they were all like comic book type stuff. It didn't feel
real.
Middle Earth-ish.
What about you, Kevin?
Well, yeah, I mean, see, the thing about the Legolas character, I think that was intentional, because they're like, oh, well, Legolas hasn't gone through his real arc yet that he will in Lord of the Rings, so we just need to make him basically full-on elf, you know, very stoic all the time, no matter what, no emotion. So it didn't bother me that much, but what in the balls is with the Alfred character in the Battle of the Five Armies? And I guess he does appear in the second movie too, but not as much. Like, did they decide, like, oh, we haven't annoyed the audience for a little while, we better get back to that guy for a little bit?
Is that's the Lake Town guy's sidekick?
He's Unibrow.
Yeah. Man. Oh God, he sucked.
I don't understand the point of it, because they don't even finish off his subplot. He just eventually just disappears. And if I would have known that was his last shot, I would have cheered in the theater. But I don't get it. I don't know what that was all about.
Was he supposed to be like a descendant of Wormtongue? Is it Wormtongue? Is that who that was?
Grima.
Is that who that's supposed to be?
It's supposed to be that same type of character, I guess. But he really doesn't do anything aside from just annoy people.
I agree with you. He never brought anything to the story, other than some weasel guy that, you know, he trying to be, I don't, I guess maybe comedy relief.
What I was thinking, like, maybe they were trying to go for comic relief, but it was not funny.
But it was not funny. Exactly.
We should get a definition of what comedy is and send it to him. Yeah. So what do you guys think his purpose was then? Just that's it? Comic relief? I mean, because I agree with you, now that I think about it, he really didn't, other than show that he's the guy that'll dress like a woman to save his own ass.
Right.
I don't really think he added much.
No, he does not serve the plot at all. And that's what you just said. I think they're like, oh, let's just dress him up. You know, let's put him in women's clothing. That'll be hilarious, right?
And honestly, if he had died when the mayor or whatever of Lake Town had had been crushed. Sorry, I'm not good with the title, so somebody can write a letter. Feel free. When he was killed, when he was crushed by Smaug, I think that it wouldn't have really affected the story at all.
No.
At all. Yeah. Oh, well. Well, much of the original book is intact, but there was some added to expand on the story, some from the Silmarillion. And then there's some completely new elements, like, I can't speak today, like Tauriel. Do you think those were good choices?
So let me take you back to college years, Kevin, for a moment. Young, brash, naive.
Does that mean weed and marijuana? Or?
Well, no.
Kickstands, beer pong.
This is super nerdy, Kevin. Well, that stuff was going on too. But this is super nerdy, Kevin. And I was so pissed at every change Peter Jackson made for The Lord of the Rings. Like, so pissed. Posting in my live journal. Yeah, that'll teach him. So it took me a long time to approach the books and films in their own arena. But ultimately, I got to the point where I don't care if you make changes to the source material as long as it services the story and the characters and delivers a stronger cinematic experience. And in this case, I have to admit that a lot of the stuff I think did help. I did not mind the addition of Tauriel, aside from maybe the relationship she has with the dwarf, because it doesn't make any damn sense for an elf and a dwarf to be immediately in a love relationship when they typically hate each other. Bard subplot, which we were talking about earlier, Azog the Defiler, I think, made a more tangible, direct antagonist for the group. So I was actually kind of pleased with a lot of the changes they made.
Brian?
I'll be honest with you. I mean, other than Tauriel, I'm really not aware of many of the stuff that was fabricated for, you know, just for the movie. It's been so long since I've read the books that, you know, I might as well have not have read them. So it's, you know, so to be honest with you, it was all pretty much new to me. So I didn't have any kind of, I guess, anything to kind of base it on.
I actually liked a lot of it. I think I'm probably in the minority where I liked Tauriel. I thought she it was nice to get a strong female character in there because there's so much man swagger running around with Gandalf and the dwarf. God, the dwarves are just so manly. And I need, you know, everything is about, we need coins and fights and beer. And I needed that female element. I needed that strong female element. And I think she brought that. And Evangeline Lilly is just one of my favorite actresses. So I'm very happy that she was there at all. I didn't necessarily like the love story arc of it. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of like, okay. But the one thing I really liked about how they did it was they didn't just make her like a girl, you know, where it's just all, oh, look, she's in danger again. I mean, she took care of herself. She really saved their ass more than anybody saved hers. And, you know, she wasn't just a damsel in distress functional character. She actually added something to the proceedings. And I liked that. I thought she was a nice addition.
I completely agree with you 100%.
And what about your little dwarf friends? Where are they hiding?
Dwarves? No dwarves here.
You've got that all wrong.
Oh, I don't think so. Barrel Rider. They sent you in here to do their dirty work while they skulk about outside.
Truly. You are mistaken, O Smaug, chiefest and greatest of calamities.
You have nice manners for a thief and a liar. I know the smell and taste of dwarf. No one better. It is the gold. They are drawn to treasure like flies to dead flesh.
Big topic of debate with this series versus the last one is the use of CGI over practical effects. We've talked about a lot on our show. Kevin, I know that you have an issue with this as well. Mm-hmm. So was this a big issue for you when you went into this series, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe with the overindulgence of the CGI, I feel like you lose that personal connection with some of the characters, some of the intensity as far as the fight scenes goes, you know. And I think back to Fellowship of the Ring, where you have these interesting new camera angles that you've never really seen before, but they were with actual people, like the camera, like from the treetops running, and you see the Uruk-hai running through the woods just before, you know, Boromir dies. Mm-hmm. And you see that stuff, and you get that, it's just that intimidation. You get that worry for the, you know, for the these characters that you've grown to attach to. And it just lacks that with the, you know, these movies were glorified cartoons. And I mean, I keep thinking of some of those other, like those older movies, like what is it, Sky Captain World of Tomorrow or whatever, where it looks real, but it's not real. So I just, it really took away from the quality of it.
Kevin, talk about the barrel chase. Do it.
I'll get to the barrel chase. I know that you're a fan and I'm not, but yeah, we talk about this a lot on Guilty Film. If you can do it practical. You know, it looks real because it is real. Its sets look more gritty, and you get better performances from your actors because, you know, they're actually in that environment or actually reacting to the other person standing in front of them. And I still don't understand why they made the main antagonist all CGI, Azog the Defiler. He would have been so much more threatening, I think. You know, threatening is a good word, I think, that Brian was using, that if he would have been a real person in a real suit with makeup. But yeah, the barrel chase. Okay, that I think that was maybe the first time in a long time I've had a truly visceral, angry reaction to a scene in a movie.
And
because
it
went so far to be just a flat-out cartoon that I completely checked out at that point when I was watching that film for the first time.
Kevin and I had talked about that before, the barrel chase, and I originally defended it because I do think it's a fun scene. But I did rewatch the first two movies before going to see the third one. And I do got to admit, some of the CGI is really bad. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there's one scene where if you saw Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, at the very beginning, you see them fall off into, off a cliff into a river. And it's that kind of bad. And mm-hmm. that was from 1984. So I don't understand it, but it definitely, I still think that the chase itself was fun. But man, you're right. That scene didn't work. Now, that's the only scene that I really had a problem with up until Battle of the Five Armies. There mm-hmm. is a lot of I wish I could just say there's a few. There are a lot of shots where I thought the CGI was bad. Mm-hmm. And it, not in a way that, okay, well, it took me out of it. There are scenes where I actually go, that's green screen. Like, I'm just a movie buff, I can almost see the green screen. And that's just not a good thing to me. And I don't know why that would be, because I know this movie cost a fortune, and I've seen effects. I mean, the Pacific Rim, you made a giant lizard come alive. I don't understand why that's okay. But this, you can't make a scene where Legolas is flipping around a bridge and not make it look like he's on a studio somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a moment in Battle of the Five Armies when the other dwarven king, is it Dane? Is that his name? Played by Billy Connolly.
Oh, why did they CGI him?
I have no idea, but there was a moment when in the battle when he's fighting that I had like flashbacks. It was like LSD flashbacks to The Matrix Reloaded when Neo is fighting all the Agent Smiths and he turns into Gumby for a moment there. It looked very similar to that.
Did you notice that they really don't give you a hard close-up of Billy Connolly's character?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. You never see his face.
Not for a long period of time. You'll see it in right. brief glimpses, like in action and movement, but you don't get like a static shot of his face, which, because I think I can't say for sure, but I swear he's almost all CGI.
Yeah,
probably. I don't know if that's true. Which,
well, he's also like 80 years old or something too. So, I mean, I don't know. That bugged me that I didn't see his face, but it was, I mean, I think the guy is way older, at least looks way older than what I think we were kind of think of him as.
Mm-hmm. He's too old to have on screen. Make him a cartoon character.
There you go.
The thing that bothered me, I think, most about it is because there's some of those atrocious moments, but Smaug, and I always say that because I can never say his name correctly, Smaug looks fantastic. Like, I think that's some of the best special effects I've ever seen in a movie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just don't understand. I'm like, did they have different CGI effects designers doing this or what? Because one looks like it was made in my basement and the other one looks like it was made in the Weta workshop. So I don't know which I don't understand. I can't combine the two and make sense of it, I guess.
Yeah, you know, Smaug looks so elaborate and everything, and you wonder how something as simple as looking up a fake smoky mountain foggy cliff would just be, you know, cakewalk. Yeah, just put the interns on it, you know, it's almost like to that level, but it just looks like, it just looks bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really have nothing to add aside from maybe the visual effects artists were as bored with the hour-long battle sequence as we were.
That's an excellent point.
Highly likely. Yeah.
An excellent point. And it's funny because it's really not it was distracting. It's not throughout the movie. There's a lot of great special effects. There's a lot of beautiful shots. I mean, Peter Jackson, I think, does a mountain shot better than any director working currently. He just has that eye for a beautiful landscape shot.
Yes, he is the king of earth porn.
He is. He makes earth look pretty. Mm-hmm. But there are some special effects that are just dicey and will totally stop the movie for me. And I thought the Defiler was one. It's just a character I always knew he was CGI every time he came on screen. Mm-hmm. And and we talked about it on the show a little bit. I think a lot of that has to do with he's got too much CGI. It very much felt like The Phantom Menace. You know, when you go from the original Star Wars trilogy and they had to rely on what they could do, and then you go to the new episodes where George Lucas decided, I want every special effect known to man to be in my movie. And he made it the busiest thing possible. That's what The Hobbit reminds me of. It reminds me of somebody that's like, we can do all this stuff now. Let's just jam it in. And because there's such an overabundance, it's distracting for me personally. That's just my opinion.
No, I completely agree with you. As a matter of fact, I've been comparing Peter Jackson to George Lucas a lot lately. I think that both of those directors put out a much greater product when the challenges to them are greater, when they have smaller budgets and they have things going wrong and they have people saying no to them. I don't think that in the later years with the prequel trilogy of Star Wars and this Lord of the Rings prequel trilogy, I don't think people said no anymore. And Peter Jackson is a man of extremes and excesses. If you look at his first couple films, that is, you know, that is all that those films are exercises in excess.
I would agree with that. Like I said, well, we're going to talk about Peter Jackson in particular here in a second, but how did you feel about one thing I loved, me personally, was the tie-in. The very beginning of the trilogy and the very end. That last shot I thought was just beautiful. How did you feel about that tie-in to the next trilogy that Jackson did at the end?
I thought it was nice. I mean, you know, you have the same director doing all six films. Why not tie them together with a nice big bow? Bring back some of those actors. I was totally for it. And as a matter of fact, when the original actors were on screen, I had so much goodwill towards those original movies. I think those were some of my favorite parts. And I will admit that I probably shouldn't like it as much as I do, but when Saruman and Elrond are kicking ass in the middle of Battle of the Five Armies, I kind of liked it a lot.
Did you? Why is that?
I don't know. There's something. Well, first of all, there's something about seeing Christopher Lee hitting people with a staff and doing like ninja moves that I just can't say no to. But I don't know. Seeing those characters kick some ass, you know, it's in a way. I have a feeling that years from now, I'm going to look back on it as the way I did with Yoda in Attack of the Clones. Like, oh, that's so cool when I first see it, and then years later, I'm like, oh my god, what did I watch?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it was kind of neat to see him. I mean, somebody that's well established as a villain for so long, for so many, well, if you count the, you know, hours and hours and hours of seeing this guy as a villain, and then you see him fighting for the side of good, which, you know, you kind of tend to forget that he was ever a good guy. Even when you see him in the Hobbit trilogy, he looks like he's got an ulterior motive whenever he's sitting around with all the good guys just discussing stuff. So, mm-hmm. To see him actually fighting and everything was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But I expected a little bit more, though, whenever he says, you know, leave him to me, or leave Sauron to me, or whatever it was he said. And kind of expected a little bit more follow-up. But
you wanted more of where he was going, what his escapade was going to be, you know, that sort of
thing? Yeah, how did he, you know, switch to the dark side? What?
So after you're complaining about these movies being too long, you want more.
Yeah.
We want more with the original cast, I think. Being the huge Lord of the Rings nerd that I am, I was hoping that Saruman would find the Palantir, which is like the kind of the crystal ball that he uses in the original films, which is kind of like the thing that corrupts him in the books.
I gotta say, this is where I totally disagree with both of you. I like that they left it ambiguous. I like that they left it for people that haven't read the books. Or that are, you know, haven't read them in years, because I haven't read them in years. Except I reread The Hobbit, but I mean the original trilogy. The fact that I can now put a lot of that into my imagination, and, you know, how was he corrupted? Let's wonder about how his, you know, how that came to be from this time frame to where Lord of the Rings starts, which is, you know, decades later. I just thought that was. I like that. I really thought for people that are fans of the series but haven't read the books, I thought that was a nice little touch for them, because now they've got the one of the few things that Peter Jackson didn't spell out, and they can come up with their own scenario for how it played. I kind of like that. And I really, really love that at some point down the line, you can play Battle of the Five Armies, and that very last shot, you can cue up Fellowship, and it's going to, they're going to mesh right into each other. I thought that was great.
I think that was very cool.
My lord, dispatch this force to Ravenhill. The dwarves are about to be overrun. Thorin must be warned.
By all means, warn him. I've spent enough elvish blood in defense of this accursed land. No more.
Thantril!
I'll go.
Don't be ridiculous. You'll never make it.
Why not?
Because they will see you coming and kill you.
No, they won't. They won't see me.
It's out of the question. I won't allow it.
I'm not asking you to allow it, Gandalf.
Now, do you guys want a return to this world? And if you do, how would you want to do it and who would you want Helm in it?
No.
Not at all?
No. The fanboy part of me does, but I just don't know. There's not really much else material to draw from. I don't want a bunch of, spin-off fanboy novel type stuff being made. I'm good with it the way it is. It's classic at this point. Even if you could even consider the Hobbit in there with it, I think it's good the way it is. Leave it alone, and I'm happy with it. I'm happy.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of people out there that are going to give me flack for saying this because they're, you know, it's sacrilege or whatever. But, I wouldn't mind someone taking the Disney Star Wars approach with this and have them start creating their own mythology beyond the scope of the books.
Really?
And, you know, technically Tolkien wrote in his appendices resolutions to most of the main characters. But I wouldn't mind disregarding that and just, you know, creating new adventures, interspersing some of the old characters I just at the end of the day, it's entertainment. And if you can bring me a great story well told, I'm happy.
You realize that there are legions of geeks that want to punch you in the face right now.
Oh, I know it.
But I agree with you. I absolutely thought about that too. I wouldn't mind a return to this world. I don't want Peter Jackson directing it, and it's nothing because I just think you've told your story. You've done the best you can. I think you can tell he's exhausted by the end of it. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that. I just think it's a world that's been very successful for him. I think it's meant a lot to him. I think his heart has been poured into this series. For better or worse, I really believe that he poured his heart into this series. Mm-hmm. And I just think you've done a masterful job tying these six movies up. Don't take a chance tarnishing that legacy, okay? I mean, we might have nitpicks with this trilogy and whatnot, but you still have done a masterful job in terms of realizing a lot of this stuff, where I think some directors never could have approached this. So I would love to see, maybe not Gandalf, because I don't know how exciting Gandalf's story could be, but maybe you get Legolas, maybe you get Tyrael's story after she leaves, because that won't affect your belief in the actual books. I mean, you take like, what was that game that just came out? Shadows of Mordor. You know, that took a story from Lord of the Rings that was completely tied in, but really separate. And I think they did a very good job and satisfied fans of both worlds. People that, didn't want anything more and people that really did. I think it really did a nice job. I think you can do it. You just got to have the right people. And I think Del Toro is the guy I would love to see represent it.
I would kill to see that.
Yeah.
Maybe ABC can do a TV series with, you know, give Agent Tauriel her own series.
Idiot. I don't know if they have the budget. Would that work for you? Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
They might as well just do a live musical of Lord of the Rings. Why not?
Oh, now you're pushing it, man. Come on. I don't want singing midgets. I don't want that. Okay, Peter Jackson kind of left the franchise, had some success, had a little disappointment. Lovely Bones didn't do as well as he hoped, but King Kong did very well. Then he came back to this and he's gotten some mixed reviews. The Rotten Tomatoes rating hasn't been nearly what it was for the first trilogy. What do you think about his evolution as a filmmaker? And I know, Kevin, you had some considerations and concerns about it. So
I have choice words.
Okay.
So I've seen almost all of his movies, with the exception of his first two films in the 80s, Bad Taste and Meet the Feebles, but I know what kind of films they are. Mm-hmm. And honestly, looking over his entire career so far, I think he's just an okay director. And a director who was the right guy at the right time to make the original Lord of the Rings trilogy. I'm not going to take that away from him. Nobody could have done that better than him. It's just, they're just masterworks. But like I was saying, I kind of see him very similar to George Lucas in this, at this point. And he just, he has that obsession with CGI that's gone off the rails. And I kind of fear that he and George Lucas are becoming the same man. I mean, has anyone seen them in the same room at the same time? Maybe they are the same man.
That's clever. Yeah. It's very possible. Because he did sell Disney. And now it was, yeah, you're right. They haven't, they're never in the same place at the same time. He found a fountain.
Video evidence.
He found a fountain of youth. I would, I don't know if I think he is a very good director. I thought Lovely Bones was actually a better movie than the reception it got. I think he's an overindulgent director, though. I don't know if the success of the original trilogy corrupted that in some degree, because his earlier films I thought were better done. They were tighter. The narrative was stronger. Whereas, as he's gone on, he has just made movies that are ridiculously long for no reason. And, like, King Kong should have been an hour shorter. Mm-hmm. You know, each of these this Hobbit trilogy, which I agree could have been fluffed out a little bit more, and I like some of the additions and don't like some of the additions, but it could have, it, two movies was the max. I think three was really stretching it, and that's where you get some of the negativity, is because you really stretched it. And he just has that overindulgent nature as he's gone on to really just, it's like nobody's there telling him no. And I think Justin actually mentioned it on our show once. Whenever you give an artist free rein, that's a dangerous thing, because you need someone that is telling them stop. What you're doing is, it's too much. You need to stop. You need to, here's where we got to cut it up. We got to trim it out. You know, you don't need this. You don't need that. You don't have to have everything your mind can think of in this movie. And I think he just needs somebody to do that. And it's similar to Lucas, where nobody's telling him that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, then there's a reason why film is a collaborative effort. You're supposed to work with other people to create the best product. When it's just one person making all the decisions, then things start to go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, you, Brian, you love him, like him, agree?
I mean, I have got a total appreciation for what he's done with the, with the Tolkien stuff. Outside of that, he's really not done much that's appealed to me. I mean, I don't dislike him. I don't avoid anything he does outside of, you know, Lord of the Rings type of stuff. You know, The Frighteners, he gets a lot of, you know, good word about. It was pretty good to me. You know, it was one of those that I kind of thought was a bit over, you know, maybe overrated. But it's I could take him or leave him. I mean, just because I see his name attached to a movie doesn't necessarily make me have to go see it. But I just think, yeah, I as far as these movies goes, though, these three just didn't feel like they were the passion project that the first three were. And it just kind of felt like, for me personally, that he just kind of was maybe more than just going through the motions, but that's kind of the sense I get.
How were your theaters when you went and seen this? Were they for either one of you? This goes for either one of you. Were they excited? Were they applauding? I mean, because the first movie, the first Hobbit, there's a lot of applause. There's a lot of audience participation. I didn't get that as much in this one. I don't know about you guys.
No, me either. There was the theater was probably half full. And this was a 10 o'clock showing. It wasn't a midnight showing. Mm-hmm. It was a 10 o'clock at night, the Tuesday before the official Wednesday release. There was progressively less and less excitement from the first Hobbit through the third one, and enjoyable. I mean, you know, again, and everything, I think most people kind of walked out with smiles on their faces and stuff, but, but there wasn't that excitement like you have clapping and cheering and talking to the movie like you get maybe at with a bunch of fanboy type, you know, because those are the people that go to these types of showings, like maybe the Avengers or something like that.
Yeah, I went to the theater at 8:30 in the morning, so it was me and a bunch of old people. and I probably should have looked around towards the end of the hour-long battle to see if they were sleeping. I did not. But yeah, there was definitely no cheering. It was very, very solemn, very quiet for the most part.
Why did you see it like at nursing home hours?
Because I didn't want there to be screaming teenagers behind me fooling around and kicking my seat. I'm an old man now, Aaron.
That's a good call. That is a good call.
I fit right in with all the other elderly people in there.
I don't know if elderly is quite the word, but
I'm getting there.
Like I said, it just, there wasn't as much audience participation, but I will tell you, similar to Desolation, and I kind of want to come back to this, and I don't think we've talked enough about Smaug. Whenever he was on, people were applauding. They were excited. That's a character I think that was perfectly realized. And I think for as much as we've kind of talked negative, talked positive about this trilogy, I can't say enough about how well Smaug was done. And Benedict Cumberbatch, yes, his voice was great, but the special effects to bring that dragon to life, I thought were just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, his voice was perfect for that character, but even still, I never felt, you know, and I'm, of course, my love for the Cumberbatches knows no bounds, and it's been well documented throughout the course of the last few years.
Yeah.
But that being said, I never thought about him as the voice. You know what I mean? I saw the dragon. I saw Smaug, and you know, kind of like Bradley Cooper with Rocket Raccoon. I mean, you know,
you had to find a way to get Guardians of the Galaxy in this freaking podcast.
It's the fact that he, you know, you didn't think of Bradley Cooper when you saw that raccoon. Same thing with Smaug and Benedict Cumberbatch. You just think of Smaug. And mm-hmm. In 3D, that thing was daggum scary.
I didn't see it in 3D. You saw it in 3D, Kevin? Did you see it in 3D?
I did not. I am definitely against all 3D.
So, Brian, I know you said you liked the 3D, but did it look good when the dragon was coming at your face?
Well, it wasn't so much coming at your face. It was, wow, that sounded really bad. It's more of the depth perception as it goes back, not so much out front towards you as it was back. But yeah, with the 3D, the 3D was fantastic for probably the first half hour of the, you know, maybe hour of the movie. But then after that, whether you just kind of forget about it or they quit embellishing it as much, it wasn't quite as noticeable. But the whole Smaug sequence was fantastic in 3D. And it really added to, you know, the whole dragon and how menacing and deadly he is.
Yeah, I'm typically very anti-3D, but I could actually make an exception for maybe wanting to see Smaug in 3D.
I think his attack on Lake Town would have been gorgeous in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Okay, well, we've had some positives, we've had some negatives, and hopefully a little bit of fun. So put them in order. What would your order be in terms of all the Lord of the Rings? How would you put them from best to worst?
Wow. So in all of them, I would say Return of the King, the Two Towers, Fellowship, the Second Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug. Then I would say the first Hobbit, and then this last one would be six.
All right, Kevin.
Number one for me is easily Fellowship of the Ring. I've always thought that was the best of the original trilogy by far. Two Towers comes after that, then Return of the King. Of the Hobbit trilogy, I think the best by a hair is Battle of the Five Armies. And then behind that is An Unexpected Journey, and then Desolation of Smaug is the worst, I think.
Really? Your Desolation of Smaug is your least favorite?
Yeah, I rewatched it yesterday, and there is so much in that film that puts me to sleep. Just so much fat on that film. I couldn't take it.
All right, well, mine would be Return of the King is my favorite. Then it would be Fellowship. Then it would be Desolation of Smaug. Then it would actually be Hobbit, Unexpected Journey. then Two Towers, then the Five Armies. Those two are my least favorite, honestly. Which, sorry guys, but that battle is too long. And Return.
I agree with that. It was way too long.
It was way too long. I think there's one thing we didn't mention. I feel really bad for. We haven't talked about the score. Howard Shore, how do you think? Because the Lord of the Rings original trilogy score is probably one of the most well received scores I've heard in a long time. Mm-hmm. How do you think this trilogy compares?
Well, I just think it fits right in with the rest of them. I didn't really notice that much of a difference. I think by this time, six movies, I mean, he does the same music in every one of them, so it should be pretty easy for him at this point. So
yeah, I feel like we've heard the same music cues so many times at this point that they're almost,
you almost
not
forget
even
about
noticeable.
It.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's like anytime a ring is mentioned, that has to come up. Did you guys feel like you wish Gollum would have popped up again? Were there any other characters you wish would have popped up again?
No, I think we got plenty of Gollum in the first one, and I think it was fantastic. It's probably one of my favorite scenes in all the Hobbit movies. I think they just got it exactly right. I think they did a great job bringing in who they needed to bring in and kept it at that.
I didn't feel like I was missing anybody. They did a pretty good job with it's kind of like pepper, you know, just a little bit in there just to kind of spice it up, but you don't want to overdo it. So,
well, before we get to the last bit, anything else you guys want to talk about? Anything else about the trilogy, the series, all six movies, anything? Kevin, you're our guest. Anything parting thoughts before we get to the final part?
I don't hate them as much as it seems like I do. So don't send me too much hate mail. I don't know. I think that the reliance of CGI was just a burden on these films. If you take that out, I think it would have been a much different experience. But again, the source material, I think, was to be expected, not as strong. So what are you going to do?
Okay. Brian?
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more of a reliance on the practical effects versus the CGI. And I realize to a certain extent, there are some things you're just going to have to do with the CGI, especially when you're talking about thousands upon thousands of, people in an army and that kind of stuff. And maybe some of the, a few of the characters. But overall, I mean, I've watched the first two Hobbit movies on cable just about any time I catch it on TV. Mm-hmm. So I think that says something to the quality of it. I know I nitpick on it. I probably embellish more on the negative stuff than I do the positive stuff. But I do love and cherish all of these movies. And while I may have, they may have their warts, I still love them. And, I'm sure I'll buy the extended edition Blu-ray box set thing whenever it comes out. I'm, here in a few months or so. So,
oh man, I watched because like I said, Desolation of Smaug is my favorite one of the Hobbit movies. And so I watched the extended edition and I just, they don't need to be any longer. They honestly don't. The first trilogy I think are awesome. The extended editions are fantastic. And I avoided those for the longest time. When I finally watched them, I was blown away how much better as movies they are. And this new trilogy, new. This is fluff. You don't need, there's some cool songs, I guess, if you really want to hear some dwarf songs, but that's really about it. For me, I'm very happy that they concluded this. I will always wish that I saw Del Toro's version, but I think Peter Jackson did a good job. It's just not as good as the first trilogy. Like Kevin said, the special effects really hindered it for me. I'm not a Lee Pace fan, so anytime he was on screen as his creepy, sexually ambiguous elf king, I just wasn't a fan of that. And I think that probably took me out of the movies, especially the Battle of the Five Armies, took me out more than anything because I just don't like him in these fantasy worlds. I didn't like him in Guardians either. So that was really my biggest naysay, that and the practical versus CGI. I really agree with what Kevin said earlier. The Defiler, if he would have been, and I think the character is good. I actually like him as an antagonist. Mm-hmm. But I just think the CGI was so overdone. It was distracting at times. And I think it could have been better if it was practical effects. And more practical effects would have made this move, this series, completely different. I totally believe that.
And it would have shortened it, too.
Yes, it probably would have shortened it, too. When you have too much CGI at your disposal, you can pretty much just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just make some more. But it was still really good. Now, lastly, before we depart on these special episodes, we like to do a little cage match where we kind of pit a few characters together. They go into the Thunderdome, as it is, and you get to tell us who you think actually makes it out alive. So if you got Thorin, you got Bilbo, you got Bard, you got Toriel, and you got the Defiler, they all walk into the Thunderdome. Who walks out of there alive? Who do you think wins in that cage match? Kevin?
Well, I think we have to scratch Bilbo off the list immediately. I'd like to think that Toriel makes it out. I think she's kind of a badass elf that can take everybody out pretty quickly and easily with grace.
Okay. Brian?
Wow. I got to go with Azog.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Toriel is nimble and everything. I think Bard would give her a fight, but I think while they're distracted fighting each other, Azog just comes in with his whichever go-go gadget, adaption he's got on his where his arm should be, you know, this movie.
Go-go gadget. That's nice.
So, I think he'd just, you know, he'd take her out.
Man, you guys are always discounting the little guy. I pick Bilbo. Bilbo's he's got the ring.
Put the ring on, disappears, wait till everybody kills himself.
And just stabs everybody individually. Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair.
He took out one of those, he saved those little midgets from the giant spiders. He's the only one that could kill them. Him and Sam. I think those two are the heroes of the entire trilogies. Both trilogies.
I don't think Bilbo's sword sting is large enough to get to any of Azog's vital organs.
All he's got to do is just keep poking him. It's like a letter opener. He just keeps going until eventually he falls down and things are good. That's what I think. All right. Well, Kevin, tell us one more time about Guilty Film. Tell us again where they can find you and how they can track your showdown.
Sure. So you can find Guilty Film at guiltyfilm.com. We keep it easy, and we are always posting on Twitter and Facebook, so you can check us out at any of those places.
What's the website again? One last time?
Guiltyfilm.com.
There you go. Guiltyfilm.com. Brian, anything you want to say before we depart?
No, man. Enjoyed it. Had a good time with you, Kevin. Come back anytime that Aaron allows you.
And, thank you.
He's welcome anytime. I like Kevin. He's a nice guy.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Not like Brian. Brian's a dick.
I am a dick.
I think you're lovely, Brian.
Aw, suck up. Look at that.
Flattery gets you everywhere.
Excellent.
And Kevin, thanks for coming on. Sincerely appreciate it. Hope you had a good time.
Oh, I did have a great time. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Once again, his website is guiltyfilm.com, and this is The Hollywood Outsider, and this is Aaron Peterson saying goodbye to you guys. You can always find us at thehollywoodoutsider.com. There is a new regular episode every Thursday. You can go, let's see, the website is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Radio, wherever you listen to podcasts, The Hollywood Outsider is probably there. Be sure to check us out. And remember, the next time you go to the theater, most likely to see The Hobbit Trilogy again. Hopefully all three movies back to back to back. Buy popcorn.
Far over the misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old, we must away at break of day to find our long forgotten gold. The pines were roaring. Oh. Chair.